Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So it's time to kind of shake off the sleepies from the afternoon nap because there's a ton of information coming your way here on the Investor Resources live radio program. And if you're awake, you can actually call in and talk to us. You can participate and have a shot at being on live radio. Magic number to get access is 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. So maybe in today's market, you are a little confused or worried about what is going on.
And if you're not, you probably should be. You should be wondering, what the heck is happening out there?
You've got lots of company. But let's start with a little bit of good news, which sounds like, and maybe it's not such good news. Remember just a little over a decade ago, the mortgage market was just ramping up and we hit a massive new high in the amount of mortgage debt in the country. That was around 06 or 07. And it took about a year and a half. And then in 08, it suddenly unwound and it was a mess.
Yeah, unwind is kind of a kind word. It pretty much just dropped off the side of a cliff. Yeah.
So there were two assumptions that had their legs kicked out from underneath them. One of them is invest in stocks because stocks always go up. And somebody say, well, that's not true, but real estate does. It turns
right?
out that's not true either. Yeah, when real estate falls 50% over the course of a year or two, you know, you can't say that always goes up. And it's the same thing with the market. But 17 years ago, we were looking at new highs in the amount of mortgage debt. But last year alone, mortgage debt increased close to $800 billion, which is almost 7% of our gross domestic product. Now, a lot of this is homeowners taking a look at cheap interest rates and they've been refinancing. And when they're refinancing and prices are up as much as they are, they're saying, oh, look how big our ATM machine is. And so houses became the ATM and people loaded up on cash to go do other things. Maybe it's updating the house. Maybe it's buying an RV.
You remember that, Ben Dunn? You remember there were ads on all the time, TV and radio, about, hey, if you're sitting on home equity, you're just a loser. You got to get out there and borrow that equity out. And people were just climbing over each other to get in there and accumulate a big chunk of debt.
Well, I had a conversation with a lady who is retiring this month. And she said, a lot of the advisors I've been talking to have been telling me to go out and refinance my house, but I don't owe very much. I'm thinking of just paying it off.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I think that's a smart move.
There you go. Yeah.
Interest is cheap, but you're retired. Your paycheck's going away. Maybe not having a house payment would make you feel more secure long term, which in fact it is more secure. You have no market risk with a free and clear house. I mean, you still have maintenance and stuff, but you know, that goes with homeownership.
It does, but you're right. We view that as a good thing. Your residence paid off for it. That's a positive move.
So the other issue is if the whole issue of just borrow against your house and write off the interest on the loan. That is an argument that's left over from pre-Reagan tax era, when if you made $50,000, you were as a married couple, you were in a 45% tax bracket. Well, that's not true anymore. So let's just assume that you've got $10,000 of interest on your mortgage, and you deduct that, and you're in a 25% tax bracket. Well, you just got $2,500 of savings, which means you really spent $7,500 in interest expense, the benefit of which is you get to live in your house. Right. But it's still hard dollar out of pocket that, it, particularly if you're retired and your cash flow's going down. But, you know, that's not necessarily good news. Anyway, we're talking about the mortgage market here and all the massive amount of debt we've accumulated. So real estate prices have gone up. I'm sure you've noticed that. Your assessment has gone up, so your taxes are going up. If you've refied, you've had an appraisal, and you've seen and you looked at that and said, oh, my goodness, I had no idea it was worth that much. Hallelujah. But so you're going to pay more taxes. You got more equity. That's all good. The other side of this massive debt bubble is that this time around, we don't have the fraudulent signatures on loan documents.
There you go.
And the credit worthiness of the people who are borrowing money on their homes is much, much higher than it was.
Yep, they're remembering. They're like, hey, remember when that happened? We don't want to do that again. And so lending standards are tighter, are closer, and the loans that they're making are actually to people who are probably going to pay them back, which, amazingly enough, is the way that's supposed to work. And the banking industry went back into the banking business, and they're doing that. So there's nowhere near as much risk in the outstanding mortgages in the United States today as there was back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s.
Yeah, you mentioned having to pay the money back.
Yeah, yeah.
what a concept.
Exactly. Before it was just like, whatever, you know.
My wife happens to have a very good credit score, and she gets offers in the mail all the time. You have been pre-approved for $250,000 loan. And I tell her, well, call them, get the money. You know, it doesn't sound like you got to pay it back. As long as that's the condition, we'll take the cash.
If that's the deal, we're in. Yeah.
Yeah. Never seems to work out that way.
No, you got to have that ticket bought to the Cayman Islands first, and then, yeah, get the money, leave the country. Otherwise, that payback thing comes along with the deal.
Anyway, this is live radio. You want to talk to us about your portfolio, some decision you're struggling with, we can at least give you a second or third opinion. In case Perry and I don't agree, you'll get two opinions.
There you go.
And the magic number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So call and break up our scheduled commentary events here.
There you go.
The next thing on our agenda is the item that's probably been in the news this week more than most anything else. And it has all to do with foreigners. Russia and Ukraine. Should you ignore what's going on between these two countries?
As far as your investment portfolio is concerned, right.
Well, you know, if you don't live there, what else are you going to worry about? Well, there's lots of things to worry about. But that's the issue. We have what is called an event. This isn't a technical driver of the market. This isn't a fundamental profit, earnings, bond spread issue. This is geopolitical event. Should you ignore the risk of macro events like this? So it's not uncommon for an advisor to get a question from a client or a prospect saying, What is it that you're doing with my portfolio about this Russia-Ukraine nonsense? Well, the typical, I don't know if it's typical, but the correct response from the advisor should be, we have limited information, there is, as you know, a huge degree of uncertainty and complexity. Have you, Mr. Client, made an assessment of the likely outcome of this tense political military standoff between the two countries? And then what's your judgment of the market's potential reaction? We haven't, because we don't know what's going
to
happen.
And that's usually when the conversation stops, because you do have to do both those things, Don. You're correct. First, you have to decide what's going to happen. And you have to accurately predict what's going to happen. And then, secondly, you have to accurately predict how's that going to affect the market. And, of course, both of those are completely unknowable things. And so trying to position a portfolio now for, you know, a double unknown doesn't seem to make much sense, but people will still try to do it. And there'll be tons of pundits telling you, here's what you should do now. And mostly you should ignore those people.
So I looked up a couple of other events that caused some market drop. And we just have to go back a couple of years when the Saudis, Aramco, which is their big oil production company, which they confiscated from U.S. producers.
Right, yeah.
And then they put it back, after years, they put it back on the stock market. Okay. Anyway, it got bombed on a drone attack in September of 19. And on that day, the market crashed 0.3%. And it took 19 days. It finally bottomed at a -4% on the market. Oh, this is the S&P. And then gotcha. In 41 days later, we were back to the start. How about the North Korea missile crisis? That was July of 17. We all remember that, right? Market's down 0.1%. And over 14 days, it bottomed out, having lost 1.5. Took a month to get back to even. The bigger one, it's that if you've been in the market at all, if you're old enough to be listening, likely to be listening to us, the odds are you remember where you were on September 11th of 01. I do. I remember exactly where I was, exactly what I was doing. I watched the event on television unfold, thinking, who put this video together? I mean, it took a while to sink in. This was live TV, not some video deal. Anyway, that one day, the market's down 4.9. Of course, that closed the market for a week. Overall, the total sell-off was just less than 12%. 31 days later, it was all history in the market. And probably the worst one, longest, was when Iraq invaded Kuwait back in August of 90. And I remember that one, too.
Sure.
Because that was the environment in which I was setting up this company, and I was trying to get out of my broker-dealer affiliations and get this firm set up. So, Mark, on the day of the event, the day of the invasion, market's down 1%. Over 3 months, it fell almost 17%. And then it took about 6 months to get back to even.
6 months.
So we're looking at this one, which clearly, if Russia invades Iraq or Ukraine, it's not going to seriously damage global energy supplies. Now, Russia's a major producer today. In fact, they are one of our major suppliers today, thanks to the administration. We are helping fund Russia's exploratory activity over there on the Ukrainian border by pumping in billions of dollars from buying oil on the market when we could have kept that money right here at home with more jobs and been the global supplier. We'd be the swing trader instead of OPEC Plus, which includes Russia.
Would have been nice. Would have been much nicer than what we're looking at now.
Yeah.
We are up against our first break here, Don. Let's go ahead and get out and take a break. We will come back and continue our conversation on macro events in the market, in the world, and how they affect the market. We'd like to remind everyone that we do have an upcoming stock market update. That's coming up Saturday, March 5th at 9 a.m., where we're going to cover anything that's going on in the world and what we are doing about it. If you'd like to get registered for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page and just give that registration link a click. You'll get an email back, and there's a link in there. And on March 5th, you just click that at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you will be live on the air with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're talking about, take a look at what's going on. And we always have plenty of time to answer all of your questions, either about individual securities or anything going on in the market or the economy at the time. So again, that'll be well worth your time, and you can register for that at iriradio.com. com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, and we would be, we'd love to talk to you, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's got to be a little rain sometime.
Yeah, it's got to be a little rain sometime, and there certainly has been some rain since the, I think the 3rd of January was the market topped out. I was looking at some of these numbers, and when you turn around and say somebody, you know, I think you have too much Apple in your portfolio. You have too much Microsoft in your portfolio. And you get, you got to be kidding me. Look, what are you talking about?
How can but that be for, true? Yeah, it can't be true.
And you've got big names, since, but the problem is that particularly with those two, and you take a look at the FANGs, and we've got more to talk about on the FANGs here a little later in the show. It's coming up on the agenda, is that the companies that make up the major part of the indexes and their and the index movement, whether it's up or down, it's just a handful of companies. Let's say the top 10 drive the index on any given day. And you have some companies that are very familiar because people use them all the time. Shopify. How about Shopify? Well, it's a big name. It's not driving the index, but it is having, it's big enough to have an impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has dropped from, it's dropped 63% from its highs, down from 1762 to 656. And when that happens, the number of professional money management firms, consider that mutual fund managers, those are the primary institutional holders of mutual, of individual stocks. What the mutual fund managers are doing will eventually be the reason the market does something over a longer term trend. Maybe not on a day to day basis, but the longer term, intermediate and longer term trends, it's a function of what the mutual funds are doing. So you take a look at Shopify. I mean, the number of institutional money managers that still hold that's down to 61%. And same thing with Roku. That stock's only down 70%.
Ouch. I mean, yeah.
And you turn around and say, well, where's that? Where are they putting their money? Well, sometimes they don't go to the stock market. They go directly to the company. And in that, what happens is one of the portfolio managers goes, calls the president of the company, say, you know, I've been watching your financials and I, you know, I really want to come talk to you. And of course, if you're from a big name mutual fund, the CEO says, well, yes, sir. How
come
soon can
down.
We make
yeah,
that? Yeah, come on down. Yep. And so you turn around, you take a look at how much professional holdings are there of some of these other companies. When you take Signature Bank, 162% is held professionally. How does that happen? It's because somebody, some big manager, went in recently and bought directly from the company. They didn't go through the brokerage firm. Now they have to pay the same kind of prices that are out in the market. They don't get a special deal.
Right. Right.
You know, they can't skew the prices. This is the percent of stock held by an institution. And Host Hotels is at 102. Sotera Energy is at 110. There's a drug manufacturer, Catalent, that's its stock's down 55%, but the percent of institutional holdings just recently jumped to 101. Somebody thinks that's got a good future. Now, it may not be a good future in the next 6 weeks. I mean, there's no correlation here. And how do numbers get above 100%? It's because those private transactions have to be reported to the SEC, and over the next quarter, all that data will catch up, and the number will drop down below 100, but it's still going to be high. It's not going to be 61 or 40. Oh, that was Tesla. So let's see what I did. I made a note on Tesla. I wonder where I put it. But the percent of institutions holding Tesla stock is below 50. They are concerned about something, or they've just simply said, you know, we've made a lot of money. Let's take some off the table and get out of here. Wait for this thing to really crash, and then we'll come back.
They're just waiting for the volatility, looking for the next leg down, and then they're going to make a buy.
And that's part of what we see going on here, and why some fund managers actually have to bet against Apple and Microsoft, because the earnings that they've had, the appreciation they've had, has become too heavily weighted in their portfolios, and they're really stuck. They're supposed to track a benchmark index, and then they can't hold everything that the index does. And so you get what looks like underperformance, because they did make a huge amount of money, had to sell their position that was doing it for them. It's one of the anomalies of being a successful large.
It's one of the headaches of being an index fund manager. When the index gets so top heavy, the SEC won't allow you to own as much of it as you want. They limit how much you can own of a single security, and it becomes less than what it should reflect because they're so heavily weighted in the index, and you end up not being able to keep that in your portfolio. So again, it's just another one of those things you need to watch if you're an index investor.
So Apple's really being driven by retail investors. They love the product, and they're not going to walk away from it. They own the stock, and they love the product. So they don't care. They think it is the cat's meow. But you turn around and take a look at what fund managers think reflected on their portfolio holdings. And who's this that did the Medalist? Perry, you pulled this article on the fund Medalist. The large fund managers do a good job. There's actually only two that have major positions in Apple. It's not that everybody doesn't have it. It's just there's American Century Ultra and American Century Select are overweight Apple, while there's a third of the funds, third of mutual funds, don't even own Apple stock where you would expect to see it. Microsoft has more participation among the fund managers, and almost half of the really successful managers don't own Tesla. And more than 60% don't own Home Depot.
And that Medalist refers to Morningstar.
Morningstar, yep. That's their evaluation, yep, of large, successful money managers. Thank
Correct.
You. I mean, I knew that was in there, and I'd read it, but somehow it slipped my mind. It's not the first thing to slip my mind. There have been a few others along the way.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone there, so yeah.
But talking about Apple and Microsoft, I mean, that brings up the issue of the FANGs.
In general,
What are we going to do to rename this, since Facebook's now Meta? What do we call them, the Mangs?
that's not as good. No, that's not as good.
It doesn't have the same ring,
no,
does it?
No.
Oh. Yeah, now Facebook. Now there's a stock I didn't think about looking. I don't know that I took a look at Facebook, and that is a stock that obviously has been under pressure, and the percent of institutionals that are holding Meta platforms, Facebook as we know it, is down to 63%. And if you hold it, one of the problems that people have on a stock like this is when it gaps down, they think, I can't handle that. I've got to wait till I get even. Except when you get a stock that gaps down, I mean, basically there's more bad news to come. And you're probably better off protecting your capital where you are.
Especially a stock as big as Meta, as big, as large as Facebook is. When that takes, what were they dropped, 26% in a day? It's like, woof.
That was 25% in one day. That's correct.
That's tough, man. That's a big drop.
That was on February 3rd. Mm. Yeah, and you look at the chart and you think, oh my goodness, that was a really big dividend. No, it wasn't a dividend. It was bad news.
They would have been happy if that was the case, but it was just a lack of new users. And that is the lifeblood of Meta platforms. So they're looking at a little swimming upstream here.
Yeah, and so there were some other, there were smaller gaps in there that were dropping, but it hadn't been moving for months. It's just basically been trending sideways since last July. Little bit of a downtrend, leveled off back in November and didn't go anywhere. And then you'd start getting these downside gaps and try to rally, and it couldn't rally. And you're sitting there holding that. And, I mean, something's wrong here. Mm-hmm. And the chart's telling you that. Who's paying attention? Are you? Or you just think, oh, I like Facebook. That's how I communicate with my grandkids. Well, that's fine. But if it's in your portfolio, not so much. Anyway, we're right up against the break as sure. we get started on this. Let's just go ahead and take that now.
Back out of here now. You betcha. Let's see. Let's talk about our week in review. We have a weekly email newsletter that goes through the news of the week, lets you know pretty much what's important out there, what you can safely ignore. It's a really good look at current financial news. If you'd like to get that, send us an email. Send the email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put week in review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin getting that on Monday. It goes out most Mondays. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong.
To be strong to survive. We were talking about Facebook, now Meta Platforms, losing 25% in one day. And the Netflix thought, well, do 25, let's see if I can beat that. Well, they didn't beat it. They only lost 20%. That was overnight after the company forecast a slowdown in new subscribers. I mean, they had almost 8.5 million new subscribers last quarter, and this quarter expect only 2.5. So after beating 7.7 billion in revenue, investors said, well, too bad for you, fellas. We're out of here.
Yeah.
That's not good news. And I was thinking about what are we going to call Fangs if with the Facebook now being Meta? And what we need to do is find a tech company that starts with L, and then we could call it Mangle.
There you go. Mangle. That'd be perfect for this market, actually. Mangle would be ideal. And, you know, one of the things that I like most about this article about, you know, it could just be the beginning of the Fangs demise, now that they're not all moving together in unison, was that that's going to happen sooner or later, no matter what. And it's important to watch that, because things like, what are the Fangs doing? That's a narrative that we get from the media and from marketers, and it doesn't necessarily reflect anything valuable. It's just what they're talking about now, and it's a real catchy acronym. So it's in the news. It's going to move on. It always does. So you don't want to be the last one hanging on to what are the Fangs doing if that's already moved on. So it's another one of those things to pay attention to.
Yeah, you know, that's a problem with concept investing. I mean, paying attention to major trends is important, particularly when they start to back up. But just to buy on concept doesn't necessarily mean anything's going to work, unless, of course, you have the position that you're a buy and hold investor and you've got 30 years and you're sure it'll work out over that period of time. And one of those concepts, well, there's several of them, particularly as we look at the cryptos, that's so far, that's concept. I mean, there's things you can do there, but there's been a lot of money lost and stolen in the brief period that they've been around.
Yep, both.
And we have blockchain technology, which is real. I mean, that's a real important development in technology and how companies are going to reinvent themselves to maintain profitability in the decade and two in front of us. Then you have the changing digital transactions. I mean, we think of PayPal. Now that I threw my paper away, but there's another one that took a really big loss since its high. I mean, it's terrible. But PayPal, I use PayPal. I mean, I have a consulting service for advisors, and I bill them through PayPal. My wife buys stuff and pays on PayPal. We know how it functions, but from a stock standpoint, you know, it's got some competition. Then there's the it's the digital layaway plan. I mean, I used to go into a department store, I mean, years ago. In fact, I remember as a child, in elementary school, going down to the local grocery store and buy groceries, and I just sign a chit, and right. my folks would get a bill at the end of the month.
Put or that on the account, right?
Yeah, they'd show up at the end of the month and say, you know, what do we owe you? That was layaway for groceries. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, go try that today. Yeah, not gonna happen.
But then a couple of decades, in the next couple of decades, you go to a department store and say, boy, I really love that couch or that appliance, but I don't have the money. I see, that's fine. It could be a small item. You know, we'll take payments over the next 90 days. And then when you've paid it off, you come in and pick it up. Well, we do that digitally today. One of those companies is Affirm, A-F-F-I-R-M, and you may see ads for them on television. You get an ad on your computer with spam stuff that comes through, email. Somebody's offering a special sale, and you can get it little down, no interest, payment over extended payments over a period of time. What concerns me about the current economy is this isn't just something for, let's buy a $5,000 mattress. It's how would you like to buy a $120 item, and we'll finance it for you.
And
for
those
free.
Are they're everywhere. If you buy things online, every time you go to checkout, there's the option to, well, would you like to pay for that in four easy payments? And you can just click the button and you get it. And there is a danger with people not tracking. Well, how many of those little loans do I have out there? And what have I run that up to? Because it's so easy just to say, well, yeah, I'll pay for that over 4 months instead of you know, paying the bill today. And all of a sudden you've got all this debt hanging out there for, like you said, Don, little purchases that you probably should have just paid for.
Well, if you can't afford the $125, you probably should wait until you can. And then anyway, that's
really good advice right there. You bet.
But how does that impact your portfolio? Well, for most people's portfolio, they're basically a Ron Popeil. Set it and forget it. Talk to your financial advisor or answer a set of questions on your big stock brokerage website or Fidelity Fund. They all have them, whether it's Schwab or Merrill or whoever. They all have these. You need help figuring out what you want to buy and how you want to allocate your account. They've got a questionnaire for you. And you go through the 10 or 20 questions and voila. Well, we think you should be in about a 60% stock and 40% bond portfolio. And look how this has worked over the last 90 years. And, you know, it's done okay. Even survived the really big crashes along the way. You know, some of them took 20 years, but you survived it. And so you say, okay, that sounds like that's good for me. And you put your money in and you go to sleep. And basically, nobody pays attention to whatever changes in the market. I mean, you're buying into energy 10 years ago when energy was a much more dominant sector in the market and has, until just recently, has continued to shrink. Well, who paid attention to that? Not if you're in a 60-40 portfolio or a standard portfolio that's somewhere around that range based on modern portfolio theory. That's a set it and forget it. Quarterly, so the story goes, because we've been there, done that. Quarterly, we'll take a look at this and we'll sell some of your winners and buy some of your losers, because eventually your losers will get healthy again. We're not sure when.
Or if they ever will, but they will, you know, the rebalancing concept, which, you know, is not even a regular occurrence. It's sometimes they'll look at it and say, well, it's not that far out of whack. We're just going to leave it alone. And basically it's there so they can do the least amount possible. And if they ever do have to sell anything or buy anything, they've got the great excuse of, well, we were selling high and buying low. So the fact that it worked out is not our fault. We were trying to do the right thing.
So what we figured out that process really has some major flaws in the underlying theory. Mm-hmm. Flaws which Harry Markowitz actually admitted were there when he published it, but it didn't matter to the financial services industry because it makes for great looking sales material. And that's what's important. And the most important part is that if you get upset and you sue us, It is our legal defense. It's not because the theory works on making money. Of course, it works if the market's going up. It's just not designed to protect in a market falling. The only protection against market falling is not owning stocks. And they do that by putting money in bonds, which worked as long as interest rates were falling, because that helps bonds. But now you're looking at a market where the Fed, and it's not just the Fed, it's the European Central Bank, it's the Bank of England, it's the Bank of Canada, it's the Bank of Japan. Central banks are making, for the first time in our lifetime, a coordinated effort to raise interest rates around the world. That's not good for your bond portfolio.
Especially if it's a fixed portion of your investment portfolio, which is what happens if you have that pie chart, if they hand you that pie chart, and you're 40% bonds until you turn 75, and now you're going to be, you know, 50% bonds or 60% bonds, and there's going to be more and more, because that's supposed to be the conservative part of your portfolio that's going to protect your returns, and it's just not going to happen in this environment. The nature of owning bonds has changed, but that is not reflected in your portfolio if you're a pie chart investor.
So what are you doing with your portfolio? Well, we don't own any bonds at the present time in any of our portfolios. Rising interest rates are damaging bonds. Think of bonds like a teeter-totter. One end is the value and the other end is rates, and they go in opposite directions. And I just gave you a list of central banks around the world that are saying that, and these happen to be the ones who are slow to the party, because
correct,
there's a list of smaller central banks, smaller countries, who have already been hiking interest rates. Brazil, the central bank, just a couple weeks ago raised their prime rate to 10.75. Russia is at 9. These other countries that are paying attention to inflation and saying we can't let this keep running are doing something about it. The Federal Reserve is thinking about it. They're talking about it, often confusing conversations from different members. It depends on whether you're from San Francisco, St. Louis, Atlanta, or New York. I mean, they all are free to express their opinion in our country. You have the ECB that up until just the last couple of weeks said, we're not going to do that. Oh, maybe we are. Chairman Lagarde has finally said, we can't let this keep happening. And so they are going to raise rates in Europe. And the Bank of England has already done so twice this last month. That's not good for bonds. And yet most people sitting around here with bonds in their portfolio are saying, this will all work out. It's my safety valve. Well, it's not safe when it's crashing. Well, it's not crashing yet. That just depends on how high interest rates are going to go before the Fed says, well, I know I told you we were going to do something about inflation, but I think instead we're going to ignore that and we're going to keep the stock market from crashing and let you live with your inflation problem. I mean, that's the problem. And the fix, there's a song, that's the fix we're in, the fix I'm in. Yeah, we should get that for bump music.
Yeah, exactly. And the Fed's got to, the Fed has been given the job also of making sure we remain at full employment. So they don't have even the option to say, well, you know what? What we need is a good 10% interest rate, because that would collapse the economy, would throw hundreds of thousands of people out of work. They can't do that. And so they are, as we've said for a long time, they're painted into a corner. They're going to have to move slowly and just hope it works. They've said, we don't know what's going to happen. We're just going to start going and see how it works out. And that's what we're under right now. That's what they're doing. That's kind of the only option they've got at this point, because no one's ever unwound this long a zero interest rate environment. And here we go. You know, we get the front row seats here. We should, let's go ahead and get out of here, Don. We're on our last break of the afternoon here. I'd like to remind everyone that coming up on Saturday, March 5th, 9 o'clock in the morning, we're going to have our next market update, where we will go through all of this kind of data to let you know where the market is, what's going on, how things are looking in the economy, and what you can do about it in your portfolio. And if you'd like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. You can just head to the webinar page, get yourself registered and be ready to go on Saturday, March 5th at 9 a.m. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that is take it higher, and that's what everybody wants to have happen in the stock market, but I'm not quite done with my end-of-week risk-on, risk-off analysis. But where I am at this point in time suggests that while we may get a day or two of rally after the big sell-off days we've had this week, it doesn't look like they are sustainable yet. I'm not sure that we've hit bottom, and if the S&P actually gets back down to October lows and breaks that level of support, this could be a really nasty first quarter. We just simply don't know. But all of our portfolios are already and have been in defensive mode.
Defensive position, sure.
Yeah. Because we adapt. We are not looking at 80 years worth of data. We're looking at what's going on right now. And if you need to sell something to protect capital, that's exactly what you should do. If things are uncertain, doesn't hurt to sit on the sidelines a little bit and let some of the garbage news, the irrationality, the volatility that's being driven by things that make no sense, kind of let us settle down. That's risk management.
That really is, and that's one of those things you do not get with the pie chart portfolio. If you're sitting there with a diversified portfolio, they are never going to tell you what we should do is raise a large cash position right now and wait for this thing to settle out. Never going to happen. They may call you and tell you, well, just hang on, everything will be fine eventually, but that's going to be it. They're not going to do anything else to protect your capital, and we think that's a mistake. Protecting capital is a big, big deal. You need to have the money going forward to reinvest. And if you lose half of it, that's not putting you in a good position to build wealth for the future.
That doesn't mean your account never goes down, because you are going to fluctuation is what happens. It's a function of just not letting it get away from you, which happens with people who use too much leverage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If we go back, if you want to use leverage, there's a couple of ways to do it. One of which is your broker gives you margin account.
Sure. Yeah.
And the other way is you buy exchange traded funds or mutual funds that use leverage internally. So one of those funds is a S&P 500 fund, which uses leverage to triple the return, the theoretical return that they're after of the S&P. So if we go back to 2020, when the S&P fell 34%, a three times long S&P 500, if you just held it, you would have declined 75%. Well, that destroys your account pretty fast.
It's not what you were looking for.
Yeah. You can't use leveraged funds and not pay attention to them. Somebody has to pay attention, whether it's you or you hire a manager to do that. But it's oversight is important. Well, we believe oversight's important whether you're using leverage or not. We do not use leverage in any of our client portfolios. So who's paying attention, or are you sleeping? I mean, being in this investment market is not for a slouch. You can't take a nap and say it'll all work out in the end.
Now, if you're working with anyone whose advice is, well, just relax and hold on and everything's going to be fine, that means they really don't care how much money you lose at any point in time. They're just saying we're going to take as long as it takes. We don't care how long it takes for your portfolio to come back. We're just going to wait however long that is. And that is just not good enough. There's no reason to follow a market down 30, 40, 50%. You don't have to do that.
Well, unless you get your advice from a friendly local neighborhood financial advisor who clearly doesn't know anything, which is what I concluded from a recent phone call.
Nah.
A person who's considering retiring and saying, well, I talked to the local representative investment person at the local credit union, and I told him I'm conservative, but I still need some growth, so I should, probably moderate would be where I want to be. And he said, just buy the S&P 500. I said, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
That's a moderate investment? No, that's 100% in equities 100% of the time. So what we're just talking about, the pandemic crash, that's 34% decline. Well, you could say, well, it didn't do what it did when the tech bubble fell 90%. I mean, so I guess you only lost a third as much. That must be moderate. I don't know how you get there. That was stupid. I mean, well, it was ignorant advice. She didn't take it. One of the other things, so part of that's concentration. The other issue is if you make a home run, be sure you set aside money for taxes.
Oh boy, what a big deal! Yeah. Yeah, if you have short term capital gains that you're going to have to cover in a given year, make sure you put that money aside. You can make a bunch of short term capital gains and then lose the money later in the year, but you still have the tax bill. And you need to put that money aside as it occurs to make sure you're not left with a huge tax bill you don't have any money to pay with.
Well, the other side of too much concentration is just basically having an all or nothing process. So you say, well, you know, I don't have that much money, or I just really like this company, and so I'm going to put it all in there.
And that is so popular right now, YOLO investing. You only live once. Just go out there and drop it all on a single thing and just shoot for the moon. That's it. Swing it for the fences. We're going to go for it all right here. That's a really fast way to end up with nothing left and no one to talk to about that, because when you go back to your message board to put that message up, they're going to say, well, let's don't post that. That's depressing. Let's don't talk about that part.
Well, that's... Now, hopefully that happens while you're young and didn't have that much money to put in. It becomes an expensive education.
There you go.
Relative to your capital base, but you certainly don't want to do that. Most likely, older investors have already had something close to that kind of experience, and they know better. I mean, that's something we see young people. In fact, I see, I've talked to some of my grandkids, and I say, let me give you some advice.
No, Grandpa, I did a lot of research. I got this figured out.
Yeah, okay, all right. Call me when you want to try to figure out how to get it back.
Because you're going to get a call. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, you want to talk to us during the week? We have a magic number for that too. That's 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. It may be that taking a look at the market and it feels a little crashy, and you're saying, "Hey, maybe I better have somebody take another look at this that's not selling me something." Well, we'd do that. You know, we'd send us your portfolio. We'll put it in our charts, and we'll give you an opinion about how we think you're structured given the current market. And you decide what you want to do with it. That's a freebie. Not that many freebies left, but a free second opinion is still available at 800-317-9119. So what are you looking at the market having dropped this last month and a half, and you're saying, I'm not sleeping too well. What do I do now? Well, one's figure out, do you actually have a plan on how to manage downside risk? Most people don't. They think they do because of the brainwashing that the financial services industry has done around modern portfolio theory.
And that's a fact. And when you don't really have a plan, and when you figure out that that pie chart is not there to protect your portfolio in a bear market, that's when people panic, because they understand all of a sudden, hey, I don't have any plan. I don't know what I'm doing in this market, and I don't know what we're going to do about it. So you just bail. You bail out, which will protect your capital, but you did it out of abject fear, and now you're going to have a really hard time getting back in, which is why we don't ever make those moves out of fear or greed. You just track the data, and you can do that because you already had a plan in place prior to a big market drop, prior to a big market run up. You need to know what you're going to do in either case, and it's really important to have that down prior to that happening, because when the market's down 50%, that's no time to start thinking about, what am I going to do here? It's too late.
So one of the ways that the financial services industry addresses this issue is ask a question like, well, how much money are you willing to lose in your portfolio?
That's a popular question. It is. They ask it all the time.
So are you willing to lose 10%? How about 20%? You don't want to lose 20. Yeah, it's $1 million. That's 200,000. So that won't keep you. Yes, that will keep. Okay, that will keep you awake. So what's that program going to do to prevent that? Absolutely nothing, except to put less and less money into stocks and more into bonds where interest rates are rising. It's backwards, but it is called best practices. Because that's how they're going to defend themselves if you lose enough money to sue them.
That's true. And essentially that risk return questionnaire, they want you to identify a pain level, and then they're going to deliver at least that much pain. That's the object. And it's got nothing to do with whether it's a good idea for you or not. Or what about looking at the market and saying, well, what kind of a market are we in, and what can we expect based on what is happening in the market today? Those questions are not there. They're all about how you feel about the market and not much else.
So the other issue is there's no perfect portfolio.
Oh, that's the true story.
Everybody wants a portfolio that goes up and never goes down. We all do. Mm. It doesn't exist. And you get a run every now and then. You think you've got it made, and then the surprise happens, and you find out you don't have it made. It's not there. And, I mean, there's just no way to do that. What you can do is you can defend against major losses. Major losses. It doesn't mean that your portfolio is now down 5 or 6 or 7% or even 10. That's kind of normal market fluctuation. But you don't want to be down 20 or 30 or 40, or heaven forbid, the tech bubble being down 80 to 90%. Mm-hmm. That you have to have a process for, and the standard client portfolio that we see coming in for a second opinion has no plan to protect capital in major drawdowns. We do. We manage for that. And our webinars help explain how that happens. You can see those at iriradio.com on the video tab. I recommend the two Januaries, this January and last January, as a place to start to get a good education about what's wrong with the most of the portfolio structure that people are told to use today. We're almost out of time. You don't have time to call us anymore, but you can call us during the week at 800-317-9119. Closed on Monday for the holiday, 800-317-9119. We are out of time. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless the United States of America. Lord willing, we'll be back next week.